Hello and welcome to the KBC Well Good podcast with me, Jerry Hussey. I'm a performance psychologist, passionate about helping people reconnect to their best version of themselves, helping them reawaken and ignite their inner passion and ability through the power of the mind. I've been lucky to work with some of the world's best athletes and business people, and can't wait to share the simple yet powerful tips proven to help you be at your best. I'm going to be joined by a number of guests in conversation to tease out those tips. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the KBC Well Good podcast. You're probably thinking, who is this strange voice? Why is it not Mr. Jerry Hussey? But don't worry, Jerry is here with us today. My name is Anthony Kelly. I'm director and co-founder of Wellfest. And I've been given the honour of hosting today's podcast and asking Jerry the questions this time. How are you feeling about that, Jerry?
I'm very good. I'm delighted you're here, actually, because you'll help me stop get distracted as I go. So you keep me on track.
in the theme of today's episode, nice segue. So today's episode is about fostering a sense of calm and overcoming the disease, as you call it, Jerry, the disease of distraction. I've heard you use that term a lot in stuff that you talk about, but could you maybe elaborate a little bit on what you mean and sort of set the scene, I suppose, of how today's podcast is going to go?
Yeah, okay. So I think in my role as performance psychologist, I work with professional sports people and businesses. And what is it that they want? They want long-term, repeatable, sustainable performance. So I think in life, that's what we want. We all want repeatable, sustainable performance. We want to live a life day to day that actually allows us to be healthy and energized in the years to come. We want to live a life that allows us to be at our daughter's wedding, that allows us to meet our grandkids. So we have to focus on the kind of two lives that we have. One is the life that's unfolding here and now, and then the life that we want to create in the future. So a healthy business also has to look at, you know, a healthy pipeline of talent, a healthy pipeline of business potential, attracting the right clients. So they always have an eye to the future. And a sports person is the same. A sports person, you know, is present, is focused, trains day to day, week to week, but they're thinking about that Olympic Games in 4 years. So they have the micro picture that fits into the macro picture. We become diseased when a lack of ease stops us from having that sense of clarity, that sense of purpose, that sense of direction. So a performance can be diseased if we, you know, if we lack that decision making, that concentration, it impacts the health of what we're trying to do in the short term, and more importantly, in the long term. When you think of the word disease, a lot of people think of physical disease, and that could be autoimmune disease, it could be type 2 diabetes, it could be dementia, and yet all the science and the research is now proving that a lot of this disease is actually lifestyle based, and it's no wonder, because break the word down, dis-ease. Lack of ease in the mind or lack of ease in the spirit creates a physical disease. So that's the power that our thoughts and emotions have. They have the ability to become physical. And that's why I call it. So disease of distraction is how in the short term, day to day, being distracted is negatively impacting our performance, holding us back, keeping us trapped within the same thinking systems and patterns, keeping us trapped within the same subconscious limits that we've always been in, and being unable to break through those into a healthier version of ourselves. But more importantly, in the long term, sometimes the way we're living, eating, sleeping and thinking in the present is actually creating a future that we wouldn't want. So what I always say is, the way we're living our life now, the amount of ease that I'm experiencing in my day-to-day life is actively creating my future. And that future is one of ease and or dis-ease.
Mm-hmm. So just to hone in on one of the things you said there about, you know, the thoughts and how much they distract us from day-to-day. Because I think people, when they think of this term in terms of distraction, they might think of like, oh, you know, I'm distracted every day by things I have to do and, you know, my job and my kids and family, whatever else it is. But a lot of the times it's actually the distractions that are going on in our own head, in the thoughts that come up and where they lead us in certain places, or, you know, the negative impacts that our thoughts have. So do you think people realise how
often they are distracted and they're not in the present moment, because it's only something you really kind of become aware of when you start going down that sort of spiritual journey that you mentioned.
Absolutely. So for me, the disease of distraction, when you overcome the disease of distraction, what you achieve is a presence. And for me, the ultimate success in life is nothing more than arriving into a place where there's no other place you'd want to be. And to have a life or a mindset where regularly throughout the day, I'm grounded. I'm in a place that I want to be. And that place that I want to be has to be myself. I'm calm. I'm confident in myself. We cannot control what goes on outside of ourselves. But what I do know is that the single biggest human dignity that we all have is the ability to choose, the ability to make a choice. So I might be in a chaotic, hostile, negative situation, but I do not need to become hostile or negative. I am not my situation. So the power of becoming present is that I can be in any situation and not become inappropriately attached to it. So we talk about that in the Buddhism, we talk about non-attachment. I'm not attached to that situation. I'm not attached to your negativity or your hostility, because I have a sense of presence. And when you start to achieve that sense of presence, that sense of being grounded on the inside, you can put people into really hostile situations and then make faster decisions better. The best example is a Formula One driver when he's going around the track and he's at, you know, in excess of 200 miles an hour, and he's listening to five or six different technical experts feeding technical information to him all the time through a headset. He's replying to those technical experts constantly. He's also watching his racing lines. He's feeling the car. He has an intuition, a sense of feeling that's not just in the mind. He can feel how the car is performing. And he's also avoiding up to 30 other competitors. And the most important aspect is when he's in that chaotic environment, the best Formula One drivers, their heart rate drops. Mm. And they know that actually they're performing at their best and moving at their quickest when everything appears to have slowed down. So that is the single biggest thing we need to change, our belief that in order to get things done and in order to be very productive in life, we need to be busy. Busy is the enemy of excellence. Mm. Presence is the ultimate performance zone, the ability to be in the moment, the ability to teacup, think clearly under pressure. That is that inner sense of this is who I am, these are my values. And in any given situation, no matter what's happening around you, your ability to think of win, so think of a win mentality. W-I-N is what's important now. And that is an incredible place to be, where as your day is unfolding, as a conversation unfolds, as a meeting unfolds, you're reprioritizing, reorganizing your thoughts and emotions to focus and attend to that which is of the most importance. Distraction is where we're thinking of the past, the future. We're not actually in the meeting or the conversation, or you're chatting away to me, Anthony, and while you're chatting, I'm already trying to think what I'm going to reply.
Yeah.
So we listen to reply, or we listen or observe to reply or to judge.
Yeah.
The real powerful communicators, the real powerful leaders, the real powerful friends are the people who simply listen to understand. They're in that conversation. And that is the ultimate gift we can give people, the gift of our total presence. And the biggest gift we can give ourselves is the gift of our total presence.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's important to be clear that nobody is ever going to say, no matter how much mindfulness, you know, you practice or how much you work on these things, that bad things are going to stop happening to you, right? And that stress is always going to be there. You know, things are going to come up in your life that you don't expect, but it's about trying to give yourself the skills to cope with them, to stay in the present moment, and as you say, to let them to wash over you to a certain extent, but not drag you down a rabbit hole of despair or anxiety or whatever it is. Because I think it is Buddhism, you know, they talk about the two darts, you know, where the first dart is the dart that causes the problem. Yeah. The second dart is the one you create of all the hysteria around the problem.
Yeah.
And that's more damaging in a lot of cases than the actual first dart. So for me, meditation and mindfulness is a way to control that second dart, where you can't control the first one, but you can definitely control how you react to it and how it takes you into a tailspin when bad things happen to you. So maybe talk a little bit about how, you know, practicing mindfulness and the effect that that can have on the body and, you know, help you to deal with those sort of situations and not get pulled all over the place.
Yeah. Well,
that's
for
my
me,
technical description of it.
No, you're right. And people, you know, people, include myself at times, will say I'm all over the place. My head is racing, you know, or thoughts seem to flip from past base, which are usually past base thoughts are usually full of the emotion of regret or and then fear-based thoughts. But it's all fiction. So this is the first thing I want to say about your thoughts and distraction. And this might be a shock to some people. Your thoughts are not real. And certainly not all your thoughts are real. Most of us are negatively stressed or responding to fiction. So for instance, when I look at you here, Anthony, I can see your shape, I can see your outline, I can see the colours of your eyes. Most people believe that we see the things around us because there's two little holes in the middle of our eye and our brain is looking out. Your brain is sitting in a dark skull. It cannot see. All it gets is light, images and sensations. Sensations through the skin, through the gut. And it has to make a decision based on light, based on images and based on memories and based on expectations. It then formulates a picture. Most people are surprised when they find out that when I look at you and I can see the door behind you, I can see your headphones on, that picture is actually created in my dark skull. It's not in front of me. It's in my mind. So as we observe reality, we have to be aware that we only come to know reality through our senses. Any one of our senses can be fooled. So depending on the story that is out playing in my mind, if I expect you to be hostile, if I believe, Anthony, that you're somehow annoyed at me, then I will observe you. I will apply that story to what I'm observing and I will look for the cues to prove I'm right. So when we have a distracted mind or when we have a mind that's full of fear or where we're worrying about a meeting, don't be surprised that the meeting looks and feels and sounds and goes exactly the way you expected it, because you will only allow yourself to observe the cues outside of yourself to match the story that's running on the inside of yourself. And when we listen to our thoughts, when we're future-based or past-based, we're flip-flopping between anxiety and stress. I have a massive meeting today. I'll always ask, well, how big is the meeting room? Massive deadlines. We're up the walls here. Just listen to the pictures you're creating. And then, and you talked there about non-attachment and the two darts. Every thought is just a neurological pathway, which is a very short piece of wire, that a thought can only last a split second. What happens then is that thought creates an emotional charge. So I have a big meeting. Then I start to doubt myself. Am I prepared? And then the emotion fires a very similar thought. So you think that you've had the same thought for the last 4 or 5 minutes. I can't get this thought out of my head. That's impossible. What's happening is because you are emotionally responding to a thought, you've had millions of similar thoughts that just keep replicating. So when you don't apply the emotional charge, what happens is the thought just stops.
Yeah.
So we can have any amount of thoughts going through our mind. But the important thing is, how many of these am I choosing to emotionally respond to? And that is the choice that we have. W-I-N, what's important now? What's singly the most important thing that I attach my emotion to? So I have a big meeting this morning. Okay, but I'm prepared. And I've done as much work as I can. And when I go into that meeting, I will be calm, I will be present. I will listen to understand. I will observe. I will give the best of myself in that meeting. And it'll go how it's meant to go. Mm. So when you surrender the need to control, surrender the need to know, allow yourself the gift of being present, suddenly you realize that I'm ever only emotionally connected to what's happening right in front of me. And the fear that we live with is always the fear of the unknown, the fear of the future. And that's fiction. Because, like I said, we construct the pictures within our head. So even we know the future is fiction because it hasn't happened. And most people might say, well, the past isn't fiction, Jerry, because the past happened. I saw it. I observed it. And I was there. And I would say, yes, you were there, and yes, you observed it. But because you observed it, you had to experience it through your interpretations, through your senses. So you didn't experience the past objectively as it happened.
Yeah.
You applied your expectations, your beliefs at that time to it. So even the past, in order for you to come to know it, had to go through your senses, which means it was your subjective past. And most of us, what's actually causing us the stress isn't what's happening in front of us. It's we live in this emotional turmoil that's caused between our fictional thoughts about past or future.
Yeah. And what's really amazing was when you start this process of observing your thoughts and you realise how many of them actually come up during a day, it really hammers home what you said, that like they can't be real because they're just popping up from somewhere. I haven't asked for them to arise. And I've found personally that I've got to some recurring thoughts that I have now. They actually make me laugh because they're like, oh, that's that old thought again that just keeps coming back, whether it's a judgment of a situation or a judgment of myself. You kind of get to a point where you realize, God, that's just so funny that just keeps coming back up and it's just not in any way through. And I think that's one of the big kind of positives of practicing mindfulness, that you can really start to explore these and then sort of dig a little bit deeper and working out, like, well, why are they coming up, and then trying to get the insight and as to why that's lingering there, because obviously there's a deeper underlying reason as to why, you know, and sometimes that these things yeah. will come up, and it can help you move a shift in yourself as well.
And you're right, and in our early conversation, and we talked about all of thoughts are driven by an emotion. So every thought you're having, what's the emotion I'm feeling? There are only two human emotions, fear and love. So a mind that is racing, a mind that is unwilling to stop and be by itself, it's trying to run away from fear. So sometimes in life you have to ask yourself, what am I fearful of? What's driving this fear? Fear that I'm not good enough. That's why I'm worrying about the meeting. I know people say to me sometimes in maybe a middle management or senior management role, I have a meeting with the CEO and I'm worried about it. And I often say, if you'd never met a CEO and you didn't know what the word CEO meant and you had no idea who he was or what he did, would you be worrying about it? Probably not. So we're worrying about stuff, and you said it's a judgment. We're making judgments about people. We're making a judgment about what we believe people think of us.
Yeah.
And we live in that shadow all the time. We live in the judgment of ourselves and we live in the judgment of other people. If you can let go of attachment, people will see me as they see me. What I say to people is, how people experience you and what people think of you is actually none of your business.
Yeah.
That's going on in their mind.
You can't control it.
So am I being true to myself? Am I being present to myself? And most people, what is the fear that I live in? I fear that I'm not good enough. I fear that I'm not loved. I'm feared that I'm not seen as successful. The ultimate thing in life, the ultimate success, is are you happy? And most people say, oh, there has to be more to it than that. Well, there's not actually. Just be happy. And they say, well, I'm happy watching TV, but I think I need to go wash the dishes now because I need to be productive. Somehow we link success to happiness or productivity. The amount of stuff I get done in a day is somehow linked to happiness. It has nothing to do with happiness. The ultimate performance zone is where you have someone who's happy in their own skin, happy in that conversation, somebody who has that internal sense of this is who I am and I will give the best version of me as far as I can in this situation. And then you go away and whatever way you judge me after that, that's you. But you need to deal with that because that's in your mind.
Yeah, so true. You know, I've had, you know, limited experience in my life of managing people and teams, and it's always amazing to me that the high performers always come into the meetings with the worried faces on because they think, you know, God, I'm not doing well enough, and how's this review going to go? And you've only got nice things to say, and it's amazing that how people perceive their own performance and the stories that they tell themselves. And I think one of the most dangerous things is prejudging what somebody else thinks, because it's you've no idea what anybody thinks or what they're going through on a particular day, and taking how they are on a day and thinking that you're somehow responsible for their emotional condition. Yeah. And, you know, we spend so much time doing that.
That's the idea,
stuff.
How much of our thoughts are fiction. And like I said, you know, Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, he says the most powerful and the last human dignity afforded to every single human being is our ability to choose how we respond. People give out about the traffic is a distraction. But hold on a second here. You are not in the traffic. You are the traffic.
Yeah.
So we are, in some ways, part of everything that's going on. Everything in your life, you're in it. Sometimes you're in things that you wouldn't choose to be in. Sometimes you're in things that you didn't want, but once it's there, it's there. Sometimes we don't get to choose what happens in our life. We don't choose the situations we find ourselves in. But we absolutely always have the choice of how I respond to this situation. That is the last and the most powerful of all human dignities.
Yeah.
When we surrender that, when you surrender your power of choice, when you surrender your thoughts and emotions so that they just simply become fused with outside other people's thoughts and emotions, you've actually surrendered yourself. You've surrendered your spirit. You've surrendered your ability to impact those around you and yourself. And I think that's really important, is that that fundamental belief that we all live in situations. We're trying to buy houses, we're working, we're stuck in traffic, we have sick children, we have these things happen. And sometimes, you know, it's the last thing we would have expected. But in any situation, how am I showing up? How am I allowing myself to respond to this? And that's the challenge. That's the stories I'm telling myself. Am I responding to fact or am I responding to a narrative? What's the story that I'm allowing to build in my head? What's the emotion that's building? And then sometimes the narrative that goes on in our head is building fear and anxiety, and we would try to get away from it. And where do we go? We go into the phone. We go into a cup of coffee. We go into a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Quick, something to numb this anxiety.
Yeah.
Or another form of distraction is emptiness. And there's a lot of people that live with emptiness. So stress can be two things. Stress can be the presence of, you know, it not necessarily acute stress where there's a tiger jumping in here about to kill us. It could be just acute stress of being on, you know, lack of sleep, being switched on, emails, phone, lots of stuff going on. That's acute stress, which is dangerous. It floods our system with cortisol and leads to disease if unregulated. But stress is also the absence. Each of us have an innate dream. We have ambitions. We have a blueprint that has been with us since the day we were born about the person that we want to be, the people we want to surround ourselves with, and the life we are capable of. There is a craving and a longing for us spiritually to be that person, to live that life. And sometimes when we're alone, we hear that and we suddenly realize that our job, our life, our friends, our thoughts, opposite to that. And that longingness, or what I call is a hole in the soul, we don't want to face it. So rather than me being alone with myself, let me try fill that hole with excessive use of a phone, excessive work, excessive noise, excessive stimulation. An alcoholic, most alcoholics are not alcoholics because they love the taste of alcohol. They love what it does for them. It either fills a hole or it numbs an inner voice. We have society that is full of addicts, work addicts, phone addicts, stress addicts, busyness addicts. The problem with those is that it's still the same pain that's driving the addiction, but they're socially rewarded as heroes. So if you are addicted to work and you spend no time with your family and you travel too much and you're neglecting your diet and your internal organs are under massive stress and about to hit fatigue because you're a work addict, you're going to wear a nice suit, drive a nice car and run a big business and people will reward you. So we have to be careful, and we all live with addictions. Mm-hmm. That could be a phone addiction, a work addiction, or an addiction to be stressed. When your brain becomes fatigued, when you fire the neurological pathways often enough that says, I'm very busy, I'm very stressed, I have to be moving. That is the only way of being, you know, and you become addicted to that.
Yeah.
And even when you get the opportunity to turn your phone off, you can't take it.
Mm.
So for me, when you talk about the disease of distraction, it's a disease because in many ways it's an addiction. It's not caused by the stuff that's happening outside your mind. It's caused by the stuff that's happening inside your mind. Any form of excess in life is pain. So it's an inflammation. If I twist or break my ankle, it swells up because of hurt. Any form of inflammation, an inflamed work life, an inflamed amount of time on my phone, an inflamed use of caffeine, an inflamed use of alcohol resorts back to a pain. What's the pain in your life?
Mm-hmm.
What's the thought that's causing you pain? And if you were to break that cycle, the external distractions disappear.
Yeah. Let's maybe take a pivot and maybe let's focus in on the phone for a second, because it's obviously, you know, it's such a hot topic. You know, I know you have some interest in stats, Jerry, in terms of how many times people check their phone a day. Do you want to share some of that stuff with the listeners?
No, I was trying to research it, and it says Irish people. Now, if you look at Irish, UK and America, the stats are different. So it's very hard to pinpoint. But they say Irish people around 75 to 100 times a day.
So just checking the phone, picking it up.
Just picking, checking it up. And then each time we pick it up, we spend at least 30 seconds. The one piece of advice, and I found this very helpful, and my phone broke 2 days ago and I still haven't replaced it, so I've had no phone for 2 days. I'm the last person that will ever tell anyone to download an app. I would say get rid of all apps if you can. But I'm going to break with tradition. There's great apps out there that track how many times you use the phone, how many times you open the phone, because very often people just unlock the phone just to see is there anything in there. So they're given out because the phone is always distracting. But even when the phone is doing nothing,
as a notification just comes in on my phone, but even good timing.
Even when they're doing nothing, they're opening the phone looking for distraction. So there's great apps that will tell you how many hours you've spent on the phone, but they'll even break it down. So how many emails, which could be work-based, but then they'll frighten you by, they say, WhatsApp, Instagram, Twitter, and you're kind of going, Jesus. So a lot of people, so that's one way of tracking. But the amount of hours we spend on a phone, and some are really productive and some people have to work on the phone, but the amount of non-productive hours we spend on the phone, and it's not just the distraction, it's the blue light. And in our sleep podcast, we talk a lot about how blue light impacts us negatively in terms of it offsets our circadian rhythms. So even exposing your eyes, exposing your brain to that amount of blue light is having a massive effect, not just on your mood and your thoughts, but physiologically now. It's negatively impacting sleep. So it's not just about how long we spend on the phone, but it's when we're on the phone. A lot of people still use the phone as their alarm clock. They wake up and the first thing they do is they bombard their brain with this artificial light. We're still on the phone before we go to bed. We're watching screens. And it's just this need for external stimulation is also the sign of just a fatigued brain.
Yeah.
So stress sometimes, the impact of you know, a fatigued brain and a stressed brain are very similar. And in sport, you talk about, you know, the effort required to do a set. So if you did 10 bench presses, you'd be asked how hard was that out of 10? You might say 9. But if you don't sleep well for the week and you don't eat well and your mood is low and you come in on a Friday and you do the exact same set with the exact same weights, suddenly it's gone from a 5 out of 10 to a 9 out of 10. So we talk about perceived effort. So many people now talk about this, how hard life is getting. Sometimes I wonder, is life actually getting harder or are we getting more tired? Mm. Our perceived effort is we have to put more and more effort in to try to keep doing the same things. And that's, for me, the sign of a fatigued brain. So a fatigued brain and a stressed brain. A fatigued brain is a distracted brain. And in our sleep podcast, we talk a lot about how we can build in more rest and recovery. So one of the keys to becoming less distracted is building more rest and recovery and allowing my brain to be more energized.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think it's in the new iPhones that's actually comes built in, the tracking in terms of what you're doing. So I've been following it since the last update, and it's actually it's quite scary when you look back at some of the stats. So if you don't have it on the iPhone, I definitely recommend getting an app and just seeing it for yourself. I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit on this one, Jerry, and say, you know, the phone is obviously getting a lot of attention, obviously, because, you know, they're so widespread. Everyone has them. Even kids have them now, and everyone seems to be going around with their faces stuck into a phone. Like, I was on a bus yesterday, and I just counted how many people weren't on a phone. There was one person on the whole bus, the weirdo, the lower level that wasn't on a phone. I was on my phone, I have to say. But I just thought it was an interesting. I knew I was doing this today, so I thought I'd try and observe it. But is the phone just the latest, you know, tool that we have for distraction? Like, you know, if you're walking down Grafton Street, the people who aren't on a phone, they're distracted as well because they're lost in their own thoughts. They're probably, if you ask them, even if they're not on the phone, could they name, you know, five things they walk past on Grafton Street? They probably say no. So the phone is just one instance of this, you know, the disease of distraction you talk about. So would you say that's the case, or has the phone maybe amplified things a little bit, or just made it more obvious, you know, that we're distracted with things?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think you're dead right. I think we've always had distractions and we always find a way. So it's like I said, ultimately, it's not the source of the distraction, or it's not the external distractor that we have to worry about. It's our internal need to be distracted. Mm. What am I trying to get away from? What's the hole in my soul? Because when I'm fulfilled in myself, when I'm happy, when I'm in the moment, I actually need very little. So there's a couple of things that happen then is as I lack, you know, the right amount of sleep and food, my mind gets stressed. So my mind starts to look to be distracted. But the phone is only one part. So it starts with what inside me needs to be distracted. So it goes back to smoking. One time ago, lots of people smoked. Phones are just the new smoking. Mm. In a few years, there will be no phones, but we'll have something else. Alcohol for years, for many people, has been the distractor. And people say, oh, but I, you know, I love it a Thursday night or Friday night, you get away from the stress of work. And but maybe the actual thing you need to do is look at, well, why am I so stressed in work? Why do I need a release from what I do? If something has taken up half my waking life. So all through the evolution of humanity, we've had distractions that people fall into. I talked about the different types of addicts. Some people are actively addicted or actively distracted by work. Some people are actively distracted or actively addicted to negative thoughts. So we can be distracted by lots of different things, and there'll always be something. But what we need to do is, what in me is fueling this? What is the hole I actually need to fill? And it's that inner thought process, that inner sense of calm. Where is any form of inflammation in your life or any form of excess is a pain. So what's the work I'm doing on myself? Where am I exploring myself? Where is creativity being expressed in my life? Where is fear shown up in my life? Where is love shown up in my life? And I think we have to do these internal audits regularly. You know, where is freshness and energy shown up? Where is fatigue shown up? Where is excess shown up? And actually nobody, don't rely on Apple to tell you about the dangers of phones. Mm-hmm. Don't rely on food companies to tell you about the dangers of processed food. Don't rely on coffee companies to tell you that coffee is bad for you. Don't rely on pharmaceutical companies to tell you that we don't need this abundance of antibiotics. We have to make these decisions. We can't outsource our wellness, and we can't outsource our mind to other people and other people's ideas. So we have to have our own agenda, and our own agenda should be simply, can I be present in my own life? Mm-hmm. Can I sit with my emotions? And even as I start to sit with my emotions, and they do make me feel anxious or scared, that's the first part of healing. Not judge it.
Yeah.
And then ask, what would changing this look like? And it is that piece. The simplest way in the world is to run away. Live with this mind that's constantly racing. And you'll just find one distraction after another. But everything has to come back and ask, why do you need to be distracted? What are you addicted to, and what does that addiction enable you to get away from? And what if you could be at peace with that? So everything comes back to me and my inner sense, a sense of calm, my inner sense of purpose. As I said, for me, success in life is nothing more than arriving into a position or a place where there's nowhere else you'd rather be. If you find that you're bored by yourself, you're in bad company. If you find that you feel anxious by yourself, then there's something about yourself that's scaring you.
Yeah.
If you find that you hate being alone and you need to be busy, then maybe you have somehow linked productivity and getting stuff done with self-esteem and value. Most people who lack self-esteem, self-worth, self-compassion feel that they need external stuff. So the constructed self. Look how much I get done. Look at the job I do. I'm a great mother. I'm a great boss. Look at all the stuff I have. So if some people feel, if I can't value myself for who I am, at least the world might value me, or I might value myself for all the stuff I get done. And that's where we become addicted to being busy.
Yeah. How would you advise somebody about maybe going about trying to start a daily practice? I know I started with a couple of apps. I hate to say it, but they're actually really good for getting going. Is there anything like that you'd recommend for people who just want to start out?
There are apps. There's Headspace and there's Calm. They're two good apps. I think for myself, it's just find space. Stop telling yourself there is no space. Stop telling yourself the time is moving very, very fast. Time is a constant. There is as much peace and beauty in the world as there is negativity. So sometimes it's about finding the space. Where could I go for a walk that reconnects me with nature? Where can I change the people I'm surrounding myself with? So it's the belief. There is space in this world and there is time. Now, where can I find it? That might be once a week. Mm-hmm. It could be golf. It could be swimming. It could be walking my dog. Something that you know you do and you enjoy it, but you've let it go. For some, it's the gym. For some, it's yoga. For some, it doesn't matter what that is. Where in your life, when you're doing that, do you not want to be anywhere else?
And I think the key is what you said is to be present when you're doing that, because there's no point going into the gym and just be thinking about all the work stuff you have to do and bringing all the stress in. So that's the key probably, isn't it?
And to find that and then value yourself enough to give yourself time to that. If you were to give away 99% of your time, that still leaves you with 15 minutes every day. At least 15 minutes of your day should be for you to be grounded, to be in the moment. And challenge yourself. Turn your phone off. Turn your phone off at 8 o'clock in the evening. And you might be surprised to know that the world is still there in the morning when you wake up. And the business hasn't closed down. And the more you challenge yourself, so what I would say is confront fear daily. I'm afraid to turn my phone off. Turn it off. I haven't time to go for a walk. So something like yoga, meditation, they don't rob you of time, they create time. Because they make your more present, you make better decisions, you make quicker decisions, you can get to things more effectively. All top performers in the world know that the extraordinary human being is simply an ordinary human being that can find extra time and space on that ball. They slow the mind down. Lewis Hamilton slows his mind down, that slows everything around him down. So value yourself enough to give yourself 1% of your time, which is 15 minutes a day, to slow your breathing down, to slow your thoughts down. Create a journal, write, describe, ask yourself, where is love in my life right now? Where is laughter in my life? And unfortunately, many of us adults, when you ask us, have you enough laughter and love in your life right now? The answer is no. Mm. Have you enough play in your life? These are fundamental spiritual needs that we have. And in order to be healthy and well, we can be physically healthy, but well, as you know, and the great name of Wellfest, to be well is like a well. It's an oasis. It's a spring. So to be physically healthy is one part. But to be well is to be energized.
Yeah.
It's to be vibrant. It's this oasis of fun and laughter. But we say to kids, it's time now to grow up and get serious. You need to get a real job. We've become over serious. We take life far too serious. We take ourselves far too serious at the expense of fun and laughter. So find, if it's dancing, laughing, for me it's boxing, find somewhere you can laugh, find somewhere that your spirit is at peace, find somewhere where you can just be present. And if you can do that for 15 minutes every day, which is only 1% of your time, you would be amazed the difference it makes.
Yeah. Just to go back and talk about the busyness, because I think it's part of this overall disease of distraction, but it's something I've tried to work on myself in terms of saying like, oh, I'm too busy to do this, or I'd love to do that, but I'm too busy. And again, it's very hard to break the cycle on that, because you genuinely, you know, when you're looking at all the things you have to get done, it's so hard to say, okay, where am I going to find time to do this? But as you pointed out, and you have to take it back, it's always a choice, you know, everything in life is always a choice. So what do you say to people as the first steps in, you know, trying to combat that mindset of being too busy to do anything?
Yeah, so yeah, it's very simple. And I think I would start, so while we talked about WIA and what's important now, for me, it's a really great way. So I would wake up in the morning and even start by writing down, what are the 5, 6, 10 things that you need to get done today? And then say, right, of these 10, which are the 3 most important? And then go after those. So I call it eating the frog. If you know that you have to eat a frog today, get out of the bloody way. Get it done quick.
Yep.
So get the 3 more. So align intent and attention. The things that you intend to get done, put all your attention into those, get them done. So for me, it's on every given day, start with a very simple list. What are the 5 or 10 most important things? And then say, right, what are the 3 most important things in the morning? Now, what are the next 3 most important things? Get them done. And then you might realize that I've actually 10 things to do and it's Monday, but some of these I can't do till Wednesday. Well, then move them into the Wednesday box and move them out of the Monday box and don't give them any more of your thought until Wednesday. So I would regularly sit down for a week or a month or a day and I'd say, right, what are the things I need to get done and when am I going to do those? So then if later on that Monday, that thing that I've put into the Wednesday box pop into my head again, I can just take a deep breath and say, okay, I know I need to do it. I know it's important and I'm going to do it.
And
I'm going to
on Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. It's not today. So you start to divide yourself. It's almost like what an airline pilot has as the crisis unfolds. He's constantly asking himself, what is singly the most important thing I need to do now? Because there are 50,000 things that want your attention all the time. But W-I-N, what do I emotionally need to be attentive right now? So intent and attention. The things that I intend to focus on at this moment are getting all my attention. And the things that are in tomorrow's box or the day after that box, they get none of my attention today.
Yeah. It's so much harder in today's world, I think, to do that because, you know, you have the you've got your to-do list and then the emails start coming in, you know, people on your team start coming in, messages start coming in, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got all these things trying to distract you from the 3 things. So is there any, I know aside is probably one, like turn off your email, turn off your phone, but aside from that, is there any little tips for, you know, trying to stay present during the day and make sure that, you know, you can come in the morning with all these intentions and then by lunchtime you can find, God, everything has gone to the hayside, I'm, you know, back to square one again. So what would you, is there little tips or techniques for people to kind of stay grounded and present?
I would say the single most powerful and most easiest is just breathing. You know, once we start to shallow breathe, once we start to not breathe from our belly, we are triggering our subconscious mind that we are now in a stress state. So that it activates the limbic brain. The limbic brain ignites with the amygdala. And what that does is shuts down the prefrontal cortex. Prefrontal cortex is what we need to make good decisions, clear decisions, process information. So as I start to shallow breathe, I'm triggering a stress response. I am then flooding my system with cortisol. I am negatively impacting and diminishing my ability to make decisions. So something as simple as breathing, but good breathing, and I know in our yoga piece we will be looking at this, it's to learn to breathe. So all great pilots, all great surgeons in a crisis situation, they breathe. It triggers not just your thoughts, but your emotions. It stops you from flooding in cortisol. So be aware of your breathing all the time. Build regular breathing patterns in before I open my laptop, before I do certain things. I breathe. If I'm in a meeting and I feel an anxiety building, I feel an anger, stop and breathe. Then when you stop and breathe, just ask yourself, how am I turning up now? Where is my mind at? Where are my emotions at? And if I was to present the best, most confident version of myself, would they be different? And then say, right, I'm switching. That's the choice we have. Mm. So it's 2 things. It's regular breathing, and then it's the awareness piece. To regularly ask yourself, what's the tone in which I'm speaking? I'm speaking too quick. I'm breathing a bit too shallow. Okay, I'm stressed. And then know if I'm breathing like this and speaking like this and thinking about negative things, I'm in the limbic part of the brain and everything else is diminished. And then other little tips like water, so important. How much water? 1% dehydration is 5% decreased brain function. So am I drinking water? Fresh air is so important. Am I getting enough fresh air? So it's building little things in throughout the day that allow you to stop, to breathe, to move, to stretch, and making sure that what's in my system is natural. So the less processed food, the less stimulants that we take, is the less the brain gets distracted.
Yeah. I think we could talk about this stuff all day and I've enjoyed it so much, but we're running out of time. So before we finish up, you know, for people who maybe want to do a little bit more exploring themselves or learn a little bit more about this stuff, is there any books or materials that you would recommend, Jerry, or that you think is a good place to start for people?
Yeah, and for me, and as a psychologist, you know, you learned about the mind and the brain and you think you're expert in that, and then you realize that, you know, most of your neurological pathways are actually in your gut. So then you have to try study a bit around nutrition and good health. And then you have people like Bruce Lipton, who talks about the biology of belief and how our thoughts and emotions impact us biologically. So if people are really interested in health, there's a great documentary out there called Transcendence. And it has, you know, some of the top performers in business and sport talk about this integrated approach to human behavior, not just about the mind, but where the mind meets the body, where the body meets the chemicals, and how it all comes together. So there's a documentary called Transcendence. It is mind-blowing how everything is connected. There's also an app called Gaia, so it's G-A-I-A, and it has some of the world's leading psychiatrists, psychologists, biologists. So for me, before you go down to the rabbit hole of thinking that all the solution is in psychology or nutrition or yoga, you have to stop and take the bigger picture. Why? So mindfulness is important, but why? And understand the science behind it. So two things I'd recommend for people. They're an easy watch and you can stop it when you need it. You could watch it on your commute. That documentary Transcendence and the app Gaia, to really give yourself the gift of getting unbiased, scientific, proven data around how we perform. And when you give yourself that data, you're stepping out of the miscommunications that are being bombarded to you by pharmaceutical companies, by phone companies, by coffee companies. You're getting out of that noise and you're being exposed to a whole different language. Mm. And it's that integrated. In order to be more mindful, more present, more happy, it's about not just how we think, but how we move, how we sleep, how we eat, and how we perceive. It is that integrated approach. So those two things, I think, are really important. And then it allows people to start making decisions about, in each of those areas, what works best for those. So it's not that one thing works for everybody, but when you get that bigger picture of how all this feeds together and how it impacts not just our performance, but more importantly, our health, the knowledge alone is so powerful and so undisputable that you'll start automatically making different decisions.
Amazing. Well, we'll include links to those in the notes with the podcast so people can check them out on their own time. I'm definitely going to check out that documentary. It sounds fantastic. Jerry, it was great having this conversation. Thanks for inviting me along to interview and to ask the questions. It's an honour, as always, to talk to you about this stuff. And I always learn something new every time we do. So
thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.